24. Tin. Decay form destroys the souls of dreams, a form of gods to avoid, it seems. Seek not its touch, nor beckon its screams, deny it. Watch where you walk, your toes to tread, or hill or rocky riverbed. Hold dear the fears that fill your head, defy it. From the Listener Song of Secrets, 27th stanza.
"Well, you see," Gaz said as he sanded the wood on Shallan's wagon. She sat nearby, listening as she worked. "Most of us, we joined the fight at the Shattered Plains for revenge, you know. Those marbles killed the king. It was going to be this grand thing and such. A fight for vengeance. A way to show the world that the Alethi don't stand for betrayal."
"Yeah," Red agreed.
The lanky bearded soldier pulled free a bar from her wagon. With this one removed, it left only three at each corner to hold up the roof. He dropped the bar with satisfaction, then dusted off his work gloves. This would help transform the vehicle from a rolling cage into a conveyance more suitable for a light-eyed lady.
"I remember it," Red continued, sitting down on the wagon's bed, legs dangling. "The call to arms came to us from High Prince Vama himself, and it moved through Far Coast like a bad stench. Every second man of age joined the cause. People wondered if you were a coward if you went to the pub for a drink but didn't wear a recruit's patch. I joined up with five of my buddies. They're all dead now, rotting in those storm-cursed chasms."
"So you just got tired of fighting?" Shallan asked. She had a desk now. Well, a table. A small piece of travel furniture that could be taken apart easily. They'd moved it out of the wagon, and she was using it to review some of Yasna's notes. The caravan was making camp as the day waned. They'd traveled well today, but Shallan wasn't pushing them hard after what they'd all been through. After 4 days of travel, they were approaching the section of the corridor where bandit strikes were much less likely. They were getting close to the Shattered Plains and the safety they offered.
"Tired of fighting," Gaz said, chuckling as he took a hinge and began nailing it in place. Occasionally he would glance to the side, a kind of nervous tick. "Damnation, no. It wasn't us. It was a storming light eyes. No offense intended, Brightness, but storm them and storm them good."
"They stopped fighting to win," Red softly added, "and they started fighting for spheres."
"Every day," Gaz said. "Every storming day we'd get up and fight on those plateaus, and we wouldn't make any progress. Who cared if we made progress? It was the gem hearts the high princes were after. And there we were, locked into virtual slavery by our military oaths. No right of travel as good citizens should have since we'd enlisted. We were dying, bleeding, and suffering so they could get rich. That was all. So we left. A bunch of us who drank together, though we served different high princes. We left them and their war behind."
"Now, Gaz," Red said, "that isn't everything. Be honest with the lady. Didn't you owe some spheres to the debtmongers, too? What was that you told us about being one step from being turned into a bridgeman?"
"Here now," Gaz said. "That's my old life. Ain't nothing in that old life that matters anymore."
He finished with the hammer.
"Besides, Brightness Shallan said our debts would be taken care of."
"Everything will be forgiven," Shallan said.
"See?
Except your breath," she added.
Gaz looked up, a blush rising on his scarred face, but Red just laughed. After a moment, Gaz gave in to chuckling.
There was something desperately affable about these soldiers. They had seized the chance to live a normal life again and were determined to hold to it. There hadn't been a single problem with discipline in the days they'd been together, and they were quick, even eager, to be of service to her.
Evidence of that came as Gaz folded the side of her wagon back up, then opened a latch and lowered a small window to let the light in. He gestured with a smile at his new window.
Maybe not nice enough to befit a light-eyed lady, but at least you'll be able to see out now.
Not bad, Red said, clapping slowly.
Why didn't you tell us you'd trained as a carpenter?
I haven't trained as one, Gaz said, expression turning oddly solemn.
I spent some time around a lumberyard, that's all. You pick up a few things.
It's very nice, Gaz, Shallan said. I appreciate it deeply.
It's nothing. You should probably have one on the other side, too. I'll see if I can scrounge another hinge off the merchants.
Already kissing the feet of our new master, Gaz?
Vatha stepped up to the group. Shallan hadn't noticed him approaching. The leader of the former deserters held a small bowl of steaming curry from the dinner cauldron. Shallan could smell the pungent peppers. While it would have made a nice change from the stew she'd eaten with the slavers, the caravan had proper women's food, which she was obliged to eat. Maybe she could sneak a bite of the curry when nobody was looking.
"You didn't ever offer to make things like this for me, Gaz,"
Vatha said, dipping his bread and tearing off a chunk with his teeth. He spoke while chewing.
"You seem happy to have been made a servant to the Light Eyes again. It's a wonder your shirt isn't torn up from all the crawling and scraping you've been doing."
Gaz blushed again. "So far as I know, Vatha," Shallan said, "you didn't have a wagon. So what is it you'd have wanted Gaz to make a window in? Your head, perhaps? I'm certain we can arrange that." Vatha smiled as he ate, though it wasn't a particularly pleasant smile.
"Did he tell you about the money he owes?"
"We will handle that problem when the time comes."
"This lot is going to be more trouble than you think, little Light Eyes," Vatha said, shaking his head as he dipped his bread again. "Going right back to where they were before."
"This time they'll be heroes for rescuing me."
He snorted.
"This lot will never be heroes. They're creme brightness, pure and simple."
Nearby, Gaz looked down, and Red turned away, but neither disagreed with the assessment.
"You're trying very hard to beat them down, Vatha," Shallan said, standing. "Are you that afraid of being wrong? One would assume you'd be accustomed to it by now."
He grunted.
"Be careful, girl. You wouldn't want to accidentally insult a man."
"The last thing I'd want to do is accidentally insult you, Vatha," Shallan said. "To think that I couldn't manage it on purpose if I wanted."
He looked at her, then flushed and took a moment, trying to come up with a response. Shallan cut in before he could do so.
"I'm not surprised you're at a loss for words, as it's also an experience I'm sure you're accustomed to. You must feel it every time someone asks you a challenging question, such as the color of your shirt."
"Cute," he said. "But words aren't going to change these men or the troubles they are in."
"On the contrary," Shallan said, meeting his eyes. "In my experience, words are where most change begins. I have promised them a second chance. I will keep my promise." Vatha grunted, but wandered away without further comment. Shallan sighed, sitting down and returning to her work.
"That one always walks around acting like a chasm fiend ate his mother," she said with a grimace. "Or perhaps the chasm fiend was his mother."
Red laughed. "If you don't mind me saying, Brightness, you have quite the clever tongue on you."
"I've never actually had someone's tongue on me," Shallan said, turning a page and not looking up. "Clever or not, I'd hazard to consider it an unpleasant experience."
"It ain't so bad," Gaz said.
They both looked at him. He shrugged.
"Just saying.
It ain't..."
Red laughed, slapping Gaz on the shoulder.
"I'm going to get some food. I'll help you hunt down that hinge afterward."
Gaz nodded,
though he glanced to the side again, that same nervous tick, and didn't join Red as the taller man walked toward the dinner cauldron. Instead, he settled down to begin sanding the floor of her wagon, where the wood had begun to splinter. She set aside the notebook in front of her, in which she had been attempting to devise ways to help her brothers. These included everything from trying to buy one of the soulcasters owned by the Alethi King, to trying to track down the ghost bloods and somehow deflect their attention. She couldn't do anything, however, until she reached the Shattered Plains, and then most of her plans would require her to have powerful allies. Shallan needed to make the betrothal to Adolin Colin go forward, not just for her family, but for the good of the world. Shallan would need the allies and resources that would give her. But what if she couldn't maintain the betrothal? What if she couldn't bring Brightness Navani to her side? She might need to proceed in finding Urethiru and preparing for the Voidbringers on her own. That terrified her, but she wanted to be ready. She dug out a different book, one of the few from Yasna's stash that didn't describe the Voidbringers or legendary Urethiru. Instead, it listed the current Alethi High Princes and discussed their political maneuvers and goals. Shallan had to be ready. She had to know the political landscape of the Alethi court. She couldn't afford ignorance. She had to know who among these people might be potential allies if all else failed her. What if this Sadius, she thought, flipping to a page in the notebook. It listed him as conniving and dangerous, but noted that both he and his wife were sharp of wit. A man of intelligence might listen to Shallan's arguments and understand them. Aladar was listed as another high prince that Yasna respected. Powerful, known for his brilliant political maneuvers. He was also fond of games of chance. Perhaps he would risk an expedition to find Urethiru if Shallan highlighted the potential riches to be found. Hatham was listed as a man of delicate politics and careful planning, another potential ally. Yasna didn't think much of Thanadol, Bethab, or Sabariel. The first she called oily, the second a dullard, and the third outrageously rude. She studied them and their motivations for some time. Eventually, Gaz stood up and dusted sawdust from his trousers. He nodded in respect to her and moved to get himself some food. "A moment, Master Gaz," she said. "I'm no master," he said, walking up to her. "Sixth non only, Brightness. Never could buy myself anything better." "How bad exactly are these debts of yours?" she asked, digging some spheres out of her safe pouch to put in the goblet on her desk.
"Well, one of the fellows I owed was executed," Gaz said, rubbing his chin. "But there is more," he hesitated. 80 ruby bromes, Brightness, though they might not take them any more. It's my head they may want these days."
"Quite a debt for a man such as yourself. Are you a gambler, then?"
"Ain't no difference," he said. "Sure."
"And that's a lie," Shallan said, cocking her head. "I would know the truth from you, Gaz."
"Just turn me over to them," he said, turning and walking toward the soup. "Ain't no matter. I'd rather that than be out here, wondering when they'll find me anyways."
Shallan watched him go, then shook her head, turning back to her studies. "She says that Urethiru is not on the Shattered Plains," Shallan thought, turning a few pages. "But how is she certain? The plains were never fully explored because of the chasms. Who knows what is out there?" Fortunately, Yasna was very complete in her notes. It appeared that most of the old records spoke of Urethiru as being in the mountains. The Shattered Plains filled a basin. No Adon could walk there, Shallan thought, flipping to a quote from The Way of Kings. Yasna questioned the validity of that statement, though Yasna questioned pretty much everything. After an hour of study as the sun sank down through the sky, Shallan found herself rubbing her temples.
"Are you well?"
Pattern's voice asked softly. He liked to come out when it was darker, and she did not forbid him. She searched and found him on the table, a complex formation of ridges in the wood. "Historians," Shallan said, "are a bunch of liars." Pattern said, sounding satisfied. That wasn't a compliment.
Oh.
Shallan slammed her current book closed. These women were supposed to be scholars. Instead of recording facts, they wrote opinions and presented them as truth. They seem to take great pains to contradict one another, and they dance around topics of import like spren around a fire, never providing heat themselves, just making a show of it. Pattern hummed.
Truth is individual.
What? No, it's not. Truth is... it's truth. Reality.
Your truth is what you see,
Pattern said, sounding confused.
What else could it be? That is the truth that you spoke to me. The truth that brings power.
She looked at him, his ridges casting shadows in the light of her spheres. She'd renewed those in the high storm last night, while she was cooped up in her box of a wagon. Pattern had started buzzing in the middle of the storm, a strange, angry sound. After that, he'd ranted in a language she didn't understand, panicking Gaz and the other soldiers she'd invited into the shelter. Luckily, they took it for granted that terrible things happened during high storms, and none had spoken of it since. Fool, she told herself, flipping to an empty page in the notes. Start acting like a scholar. Yasna would be disappointed. She wrote down what Pattern had said just now. Pattern, she said, tapping her pencil, one she'd gotten from the merchants along with paper. This table has four legs. Would you not say that is a truth, independent of my perspective? Pattern buzzed uncertainly.
What is a leg? Only as it is defined by you. Without a perspective, there is no such thing as a leg or a table. There is only wood.
You've told me the table perceives itself this way.
Because people have considered it long enough as being a table, Pattern said. It becomes truth to the table because of the truth the people create for it.
Interesting, Shallan thought, scribbling away at her notebook. She wasn't so interested in the nature of truth at the moment, but in how Pattern perceived it. Is this because he's from the cognitive realm? The books say that the spiritual realm is a place of pure truth, while the cognitive is more fluid. Spren, Shallan said. If people weren't here, would Spren have thought?
Not here in this realm, Pattern said. I do not know about the other realm.
You don't sound concerned, Shallan said. Your entire existence might be dependent on people.
It is, Pattern said,
again unconcerned.
But children are dependent upon parents.
He hesitated.
Besides, there are others who think.
Voidbringers, Shallan said, cold.
Yes. I do not think that my kind would live in a world with only them. They have their own spren.
Shallan sat up sharply. Their own spren? Pattern shrank on her table, scrunching up, his ridges growing less distinct as they mashed together. Well? Shallan asked.
We do not speak of this.
You might want to start, Shallan said. It's important. Pattern buzzed. She thought he was going to insist on the point, but after a moment he continued in a very small voice.
Spren are power. Shattered power. Power given thought by the perceptions of men. Honor, cultivation, and
and another. Fragments broken off.
Another? Shallan prodded. Pattern's buzz became a whine, going so high-pitched she almost couldn't hear it.
Odium!
He spoke the word as if needing to force it out. Shallan wrote furiously. Odium. Hatred. A type of spren? Perhaps a large, unique one, like Kusisesh from Eerie, or the Night Watcher. Hatred spren. She'd never heard of such a thing. As she wrote, one of her slaves approached in the darkening night. The timid man wore a simple tunic and trousers, one of the sets given to Shallan by the merchants. The gift was welcome, as the last of Shallan's spheres were in the goblet before her, and wouldn't be enough to buy a meal at some of the finer restaurants in Carbranth.
Brightness?
The man asked.
Yes, Suna?
He pointed.
The other lady, she asked me to tell you.
He was pointing toward the tent used by Tin, the tall woman who was leader of the few remaining caravan guards. She wants me to visit her? Shallan asked.
Yes,
Suna said, looking down.
For food, I guess.
Thank you, Suna, Shallan said, freeing him to go back toward the fire, where he and the other slaves were helping with the cooking, while Parshman gathered wood. Shallan's slaves were a quiet group. They had tattoos on their foreheads rather than brands. It was the kinder way to do it, and usually marked a person who had entered servitude willingly, as opposed to being forced into it as a punishment for a violent or terrible crime. They were men with debts, or the children of slaves who still bore the debt of their parents. They were accustomed to labor, and seemed frightened by the idea of what she was paying them. Pittance though it was, it would see most of them freed in under 2 years. They were obviously uncomfortable with that idea. Shallan shook her head, packing away her things. As she walked toward Tin's tent, Shallan paused at the fire and asked Red to lift her table back into the wagon and secure it there. She did worry about her things, but she no longer kept any spheres in there, and had left it open so Red and Gaz could glimpse inside and see only books. Hopefully there would be no incentive for people to go rooting through them. "You dance around the truth, too," she thought to herself as she walked away from the fire. "Just like those historians you were ranting about." She pretended these men were heroes, but had no illusions about how quickly they could change coats in the wrong circumstances. Tin's tent was large and well lit. The woman didn't travel like a simple guard. In many ways, she was the most intriguing person here. One of the few light eyes aside from the merchants themselves. A woman who wore a sword. Shallan peeked in through the open flaps and found several parshmen setting up a meal on a low travel table, meant for people to eat at while sitting on the floor. The parshmen hurried out, and Shallan watched them suspiciously. Tin herself stood by a window cut into the cloth. She wore her long tan coat, buckled at the waist and almost closed. It had a dress-like feel to it, though it was far stiffer than any dress Shallan had worn, matched by the stiff trousers the woman wore underneath.
"I asked your men," Tin said without turning, "and they said you hadn't dined yet. I had the parshmen bring enough for two."
"Thank you," Shallan said, entering and trying to keep the hesitation from her voice. Among these people, she wasn't a timid girl, but a powerful woman, theoretically.
"I've ordered my people to keep the perimeter clear," Tin said. "We can speak freely."
"That is well," Shallan said.
"It means," Tin said, turning around, "that you can tell me who you really are."
"Stormfather? What did that mean?"
"I'm Shallan Devar, as I have said."
"Yes," Tin said, walking over and sitting down at the table. "Please," she said, gesturing.
Shallan seated herself carefully, using a ladylike posture, with legs bent to the side.
Tin sat cross-legged after flipping her coat out behind her. She dug into her meal, dipping flat bread in a curry that seemed too dark and smelled too peppery to be feminine. "Men's food?" Shallan asked.
"I've always hated those definitions," Tin said. "I was raised in Tubela by parents who worked as interpreters. I didn't realize certain foods were supposed to be for women or men until I visited my parents' homeland for the first time. Still seems stupid to me. I'll eat what I want, thank you very much."
Shallan's own meal was more proper, smelling sweet rather than savory. She ate, only now realizing how hungry she was.
"I have a span read," Tin said.
Shallan looked up, tip of her bread in her dipping bowl.
"It's connected to one over in Tashik," Tin continued, "at one of their new information houses. You hire an intermediary there and they can perform services for you. Research, make inquiries, even relay messages for you via span read to any major city in the world. Quite spectacular."
"That sounds useful," Shallan said carefully.
"Indeed. You can find out all kinds of things. For example, I had my contact find out what they could on House Devar. It's apparently a small, out-of-the-way house with large debts and an erratic house leader who may or may not still be alive. He has a daughter, Shallan, whom nobody seems to have met."
"I am that daughter," Shallan said. "So I'd say that nobody is a stretch."
"And why," Tin said, "would an unknown scion of a minor Vaden family be traveling the Frostlands with a group of slavers, all the while claiming she's expected at the Shattered Plains, and that her rescue will be celebrated, that she has powerful connections, enough to pay the salaries of a full mercenary troop?"
"Truth is sometimes more surprising than a lie."
Tin smiled, then leaned forward. "It's all right. You don't need to keep up the front with me. You're actually doing a good job here. I've discarded my annoyance with you and have decided to be impressed instead. You're new to this, but talented."
"This?" Shallan asked.
"The art of the con, of course," Tin said. "The grand act of pretending to be someone you aren't and running off with the goods. I like what you pulled with those deserters. It was a big gamble, and it paid off. But now you're in a predicament. You're pretending to be someone several steps above your station and are promising a grand payoff. I've run that scam before, and the trickiest part is the end. If you don't handle this well, these heroes you've recruited will have no qualms stringing you up by the neck. I've noticed that you're dragging your feet moving us toward the plains. You're uncertain, aren't you? In over your head?"
"Most definitely," Shallan said softly.
"Well," Tin said, digging into her food, "I'm here to help."
"At what cost?" This woman certainly did like to talk. Shallan was inclined to let her continue.
"I want in on whatever you're planning," Tin said, stabbing her bread down into the bowl like a sword into a great shell. "You came all the way here to the Frostlands for something. Your plot is likely no small con, but I can't help but assume you don't have the experience to pull it off."
Shallan tapped her finger against the table. Who would she be for this woman? Who did she need to be? "She seems like a master con artist," Shallan thought, sweating. "I can't fool someone like this."
Except that she already had. Accidentally.
"How did you end up here?" Shallan asked.
"Leading guards on a caravan? Is that part of a con?"
Tin laughed.
"This? No, it wouldn't be worth the trouble. I may have exaggerated my experience in talking to the caravan leaders, but I needed to get to the Shattered Plains and didn't have the resources to do it on my own. Not safely."
"How does a woman like you end up without resources, though?" Shallan asked, frowning.
"I'd think you would never be without." "I'm not," Tin said, gesturing. "As you can plainly see. You're going to have to get used to rebuilding if you want to join the profession. It comes, it goes.
I got stuck down south without any spheres, and am finding my way to more civilized countries.
To the Shattered Plains, Shallan said.
You have a job there of some sort as well? A con you're intending to pull?
Tin smiled.
This isn't about me, kid. It's about you, and what I can do for you. I know people in the war camps. It's practically the new capital of Alethkar. Everything interesting in the country is happening there. Money is flowing like rivers after a storm. But everyone considers it a frontier, and so laws are lax. A woman can get ahead if she knows the right people.
Tin leaned forward, and her expression darkened.
But if she doesn't, she can make enemies really quickly. Trust me. You want to know who I know, and you want to work with them. Without their approval, nothing big happens at the Shattered Plains. So I ask you again, what are you hoping to accomplish there?
I know something about Dalinar Kholin.
Old Blackthorn himself? Tin said, surprised.
He's been living a boring life lately, all superior, like he's some hero from the legends.
Yes. Well, what I know is going to be very important to him.
Very.
Well, what is this secret?
Shallan didn't answer.
Not willing to divulge the goods yet, Tin said.
Well, that's understandable. Blackmail is a tricky one. You'll be glad you brought me on. You are bringing me on, aren't you?
Yes, Shallan said. I do believe I could learn some things from you.